brief introduction to Mershita Maria Sabato. Mershita Stephanie Maria Sabato. Sabato. Mershita Stephanie Nuria Sabato's studies of world religions have taken her on spiritual pilgrimages throughout Europe, the Middle East, and India. Her first journey to India was in 1990, when she personally met Mother Teresa and His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama. Nuria has taught meditation throughout the U.S., Europe, and India. She has been initiated by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, as well as by His Eminence Kamchul Rinpoche, Umchuk Rinpoche, Reber Rinpoche, and Rabdom Rinpoche. In 1997, Nuria co-founded the Jamsa Sopa Foundation, the Tibetan American Friendship Society. The foundation is dedicated to raising and distributing aid to suffering exiled Tibetan refugees. Her work as co-founder and chair has received recognition by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and in 1997, she was invited to meet with His Holiness in his personal residence in Dharamsala, India. Professionally, Nuria is an interdisciplinary educator, designer, artist. Her work as a designer, artist, has been exhibited throughout the U.S., Europe, and Asia. Her work has appeared in several publications and books, and has won her numerous honors and awards. She has been involved in the education of artists and designers for over 25 years. In 2007, she was named an American Institute of Graphic Artists Fellow, recognizing her work as an educator. Mershita Stephanie Maria Sabato.
I'd like to start. Hello. I'm so used to just talking into the crowd, you know, moving into the classroom. Maybe start by listening to this Tibetan bowl. They are sometimes called singing bowls, but in truth, in Tibet, they're medicine bowls. They're made of seven different metals, said to resonate with the different centers of the body. And a person that's trained in Tibetan medicine would use these bowls to harmonize disharmony in the body, known as disease, and also to extract things that are unwanted from the body. So I thought we might listen to the bowl for just a moment. And as I play the bowl, please see if you can really enter deeply into that sound. And you'll also notice the voice of the bowl starts to have a kind of call and response. Maybe they've referred to it as overtones previously in this conference. Can everyone hear me okay? Good. Let me know if you can't. Just speak up, Maria. See if you can feel or experience or enter the gap. I think you'll know what I mean. Thank you. Just prior to leaving for this conference, well, first of all, you know what? I want to say something. I want to say thank you to all the people. I know that Jalaluddin and Fazal and Issa have been so dedicated to this project. It's huge, the concentration that they've had. And so let's just sort of think of them for a moment in the silence. And right now, you know, things are catalyzing around this concert, and let's offer them our gratitude. The most beautiful things that we can feel are gratitude and love. And also to our beloved Pir Murshid, Hidayat and Murshid Aziza. Look how long they've traveled to come here and be with us. And also Murshid Karim Bash and Murshid Nawab. What a loving sacrifice, service they offer to us. Okay, thank you. I'm going to adjust this. It may make a little sound. Excuse me. I'm not exactly sure where it needs to be, but I'll put it there. Now, you know, before I left Kansas City, I was in touch with another person that I want to say her name in the space, because she works tirelessly also for the message, Hamida, and I can't pronounce her last name. Can someone help me?
Verlinden.
She works at the headquarters in The Hague, and she's amazing. You know, she just is a tireless servant. And there had been some discussion in our community about Sufism. And you know, the thing is that when people talk about Sufism, they spend a lot of time telling us what it's not. Well, it's not a religion. Well, it's not really this. It's not that. So I remember the couple of times that I've been in Holland with some of you, and the beautiful recording of Pir Murshid that was given in 1926 on the American radio. And I wish we could hear his voice, but I will do my best. And this is for the benefit of people that are maybe new to this. And I offer this to you. And I think I found that just this morning when I was meditating, the true link then to the rest of this presentation. This was recorded, by the way, at Sanders Recording Studios in New York. 1103 6th Avenue, New York, USA. Mm-hmm. Beloved ones of God, Sufi message is a message today being given to humanity. It is not a message of the East, but it is the message of the soul, the spirit. The Sufi word means wisdom, which comes from the root Safiya. It is the work of that wisdom to give the message today to humanity in order that people may come together in a better understanding, arising beyond the different sections of caste and creeds which divide mankind. The Sufi message is an answer to the cry of humanity today. At this moment, 1926, when materialism is all-pervading and commercialism is continually on the increase, the Sufi message respects all religions, recognizes all scriptures, regards all the prophets held in esteem by large sections of humanity, and is the source and goal of all his wisdom in the One. So I ask, how can we hear this cry of humanity? It's a very important question, and in a way, this is our sacred task. So when Jalaluddin called, and some of you were here during that first afternoon when we did some introductions, he asked me to come to the Mysticism of Sound conference, and truly, it's so interesting to me. I find myself very involved with these amazing musicians and composers and raga singers, and I don't know anything about music. I cannot read one note, but my heart really feels it. I have a deep appreciation and respect. I believe this is the vibration that the whole universe needs to come into balance. So, as I said that first day, I asked him, will you please allow me to speak on the mysticism of silence, which is a bit of an oxymoron, because, well, how do you speak about silence? Right? So you're probably thinking that. And you're wondering, well, are we just going to sit in silence for this bit of time together? And I can tell you truly, from personal experience and doing that for long periods of time in monasteries in India, it's a worthwhile endeavor. But no. I have some pointing out instructions, as my teachers call it in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. Murshid calls them indications. And I'd like to share these regarding the significance of silence and the benefit of an attitude in life that embraces the silence and those gaps. Hazaradanayak Khan tells us, self-realization is where the word is silent. The object of the Sufi is to enter into the silence. To learn to leave the form and the external world with all its attributes, to cease striving for anything but the goal. God is not in time, therefore he is in silence. Sound is part of the world of time. The sage cannot say more than this, for the subject is so vast. When we come to the conception, we find that it is altogether too subtle, too vast to express. Further, Murshid tells us, teaches us really, tuning ourselves to the infinite is achieved by the way of silence, by the way of meditation, by the way of thinking of something which is beyond and above all things of this mortal world, by giving some moments of our life to the thought of getting in tune with that which is the source and goal of all of us, realizing that in that source alone is the secret of our happiness and peace. My God, that's a really beautiful... This isn't a fairy tale. Our teacher is telling us this. That by getting in tune with that which is the source and goal of all, realizing that in that source alone is the secret of our happiness and peace. In a way, I personally think of silence as a bridge, as a way of connecting us to something, as Hazaradanayak Khan says, to that something which is beyond and above this mortal world. Think of it. Moments of silence, those significant gaps, dynamic, full, held in equipoise. So let me give you a few examples. Think about those silent moments when a baby has been birthed into the world and has left the mother's womb. How many of us can recall those moments of silence before the newborn took its first breath? Can you recall that silence? That silence was like an eternal moment in which all hopes, aspirations, prayers were held in equipoise. Can you remember that? How many can remember that? Parents here, do you recall that? Yeah. Some women are shaking their heads. You can imagine it, can't you? That moment. It's like there's a flash, in a way. The whole future of that child. What will they come to be? And in fact, are they going to take that first breath? So the gap, the silence, the space, the moment. Let me give you another example. A friend of mine, excuse me, of the Jewish faith, poignantly expressed this idea to me, this gap. She had asked me to recite a particular prayer so that she could write it down. When I said the word God, she wrote G space D. And then she mused and she said to me, old habit. And I said, what? And she said, you know, in Judaism, we don't speak the word of God. It is inexpressible. It is in the silence that we meet God. And so I always write, she's speaking of herself, the word God as G space D. One of my mentors and friends along the spiritual path is the late Guru Panapana. And Guruji used to say when he was teaching us ragas, in a very slow, deliberate speech, does anyone know Guruji here in the room? Yeah, so you know. So he said, don't stand on the notes. The music is between the notes. Anyone remember him saying that? Well, also, think about it tonight. Really, let's pay attention. There'll be that moment when the musicians have all tuned and the conductor comes out and he'll kind of poise us in a certain way. You know, pay attention to that moment. You know that moment? It's kind of like a little exciting, isn't it? It's like, wow, we're about to go on a journey. What's going to happen next? You know that moment before. And then we start that journey. How extraordinary. Well, that concept can be understood very much in relationship to music. We had a lot of discussions about that. But you know, it also applies to life. In our ordinary life, a lot of energy and time is coalesced around pivotal moments. And you know, we make our plans, and then we wait for them to unfold. We wait in anticipation for that next step. But what about the gap? The silence? The energy in the in-betweens. I had asked Kabria to read that introduction because I refer here to Tibetan Buddhism, of which I'm absolutely convinced Hazrat Anayat Khan was well acquainted with Buddhist philosophy. If you know them both, you'll see that in his writings. and feel it. And I'm making references here, so I wanted you to understand context. Shogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, in his book titled Journey Without Goal, The Tantric Wisdom of the Buddha, describes this journey as, the in-betweens is the most important part of life. Spiritual practice and what ultimately leads us to realization. The in-betweens is the most important part of life. Mother Teresa reminds us, we need to find God, and God cannot be found in noise and restlessness. God is the friend of silence. See how nature, trees, flowers, grass grows in silence. See the stars and the moon. We saw some just a little while ago, David. Thank you. And see how they move in silence. We need silence to be able to touch souls. As Hazara Naik Khan said, the cry to hear the cry of humanity. Am I speaking too slow? I try to do that because sometimes I think, well, you know, it's an attitude. I'm here speaking of silence. I want to make there to be a little space. But also, I know we have some visitors. I want to make sure that this is comprehensible. Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. You can go. I'm really good at taking clues, believe me. So we need silence to be able to touch souls. And think of it, how profound that statement is. We need silence to be able to touch souls. Wow. It's in the silence. It's in the breath. Don't you cry over there. Well, some of you know that I live in Kansas City, Missouri. And about 15 minutes from my home, there's the worldwide headquarters of the Unity Movement. It's interesting, they also have a sun with wings. Yeah, their symbol. And from time to time, I've been asked to lead those in retreat toward their goal of silent meditation. And you know, some individuals have confided in me that they actually fear the silence. You know that, Korean Basha? Yeah. So, I say to them, why? And they say they don't know, but they're afraid. And then I ask them again, why are you afraid of the silence? And then the answer comes, because I'm afraid to be alone with my own thoughts. And then I say, you're not alone. God is with you. And what's more, God is in you. And in your thoughts, too. Please take the time to listen deeply. Henry David Thoreau is quoted as saying, silence is the universal refuge. This feeling of silence as a refuge is highlighted in a play titled Amin by Hazrat Inayat Khan. In the play, the main character, Amin, goes through the process of developing from a boy to a man. In the final act, Amin is wandering alone in the desert. Yeah, you know that feeling? And he's involved in an internal dialogue. You know that one too, huh? And he's searching, you know, in that desert, in that solitude, in that solitude, for the infinite. So I'm going to tell you these last little pieces of this story by our beloved Hazrat Inayat Khan. But really, it's a universal story, and see if it doesn't map on to some of your own internal musings from time to time. So Amin sitting there in the desert alone, and the internal voice within him says this, Home is a world. Home is a world. The life outside home is the underworld. But this wilderness is my paradise. I feel myself only when I am by myself. It is then that I look at the whole world as an onlooker. There must be some reason why I'm attracted to this spot. You get that? Can you see it back there?
Right here.
Amin continues, there are many reasons, but how many can be explained? The heavy responsibility of home life, the continual struggle with the outside world, the smallness of human character, the ever-changing nature of life, the falsehood that exists in the life of the generality, the absence of justice, and the lack of wisdom. All these and many, many other things make life unbearable for me. Can you relate? Besides the ever-jarring influences coming from all around work upon my sensitive heart and make me feel lost sometimes, and it is only here, away from the continual turmoil of life in the world, that I find some rest. Amin goes on, and yet I wonder if my heart is really at rest. No. My heart can't be really rested. If I am here away from the world and my fellow men are in the midst of turmoil, it cannot give me the peace I want. It keeps my mind uneasy. Now think of it. You know, Hazrat and I, Khan, didn't create monasteries and convents. This isn't a monastic tradition. It's one where we look like everybody else, we talk like everybody else, we interact with everybody else, but we're listening for that cry of humanity. It's not about us. It's about that cry and taking that sacred task to answer it. So back to Amin. So he asked himself, what could I do to make the condition of my people better? Shall I work and be rich and help them with my riches? But how far would those riches go to provide for their endless needs? Shall I be powerful and control them and rule them? Well, what would that do? It will only turn them from servants into slaves. Shall I teach them goodness? But where does goodness belong? It belongs to God. I must seek God myself first before I speak of goodness to my fellow men. And where shall I find him? If he's to be found anywhere, it is here in the solitude of my soul. I become attuned to nature, another great teaching of our master. I could sit here for days, looking at the wide spans of the endless horizon, where not even a bird makes a sound by the fluttering of its wings. I need not try to be silent here. Silence reigns here. The spheres of silence itself. O thou, longed for beloved, if thou art anywhere to be found, it is here. I do not speak. I will not speak. I only listen. I will listen. Speak to me. Amin sits silent. A voice comes to him and says, "Cry on the name of thy Lord. Cry on the name of thy Lord. Cry on the name of thy Lord." So Amin invokes the sacred name of God, and again he sits silent. After this silence, Amin reflects inwardly. Through the whispering of the breeze, through the cooing of the wind, through the rippling of the water, through the cracking of the thunder, through the fluttering of the leaves, I hear thy gentle whisper in answer to my heart's cry. Well, like Amin, we sometimes experience dissatisfaction in our lives. Is it not true? And also like Amin, we too realize that our hearts cannot really be rested if we're away from the world. I mean, how can we leave the people that we care about and our responsibilities? So there is this question. How can we be in the world and not consumed by the world? Overcome and overrun by the world? For me, it's only for me, but maybe for you, I hope. The answer is clear and obvious. It's through an inner silence. So there are lessons here for all of us, and each one of us will interpret this little story of Amin in his own unique way. Yet the burning question arises, at least for me, do we take that time to listen within, in the stillness, in the silence? Do we take the time to listen to the whisper of the breeze, to the cooing of the wind, to that rippling in the water, to the fluttering of the leaves, in which lies the constant and gentle whisper in answer to our heart's cry? Yeah? So listen to this one. This is the crack of the Buddhist master. You know that stick. The Tibetan Buddhist master Sogyal Rinpoche writes, "How many of us are swept away by what can be called active laziness?" Laziness consisting of cramming our lives with compulsive activity so that there's not time left to confront the real issues. If we look into our lives, we will see clearly how many unimportant tasks, so-called responsibilities, accumulate to fill them up. We tell ourselves we want to spend time on the important things of life, but there's never any time. So helplessly, we watch our days fill up with telephone calls and petty projects, and the diet was here, he'd say the computer and Skype and email. And with all these responsibilities. And then Sogyal Rinpoche says, or should we call them irresponsibilities? So I wonder what shape our lives would take if we took as our primary responsibility to find some time every day to be silent and still and receptive, listening to the gentle whisper to our heart's cry, like a musician tuning a fine instrument. We can tune ourselves to our perfect pitch. Now, this last spring, I had the really good fortune of having a sabbatical leave, 8 months of freedom with pay from my professorial post. And I spent 2 months in India, and time in Europe as well, performing research. And it was during that time that I met a man who had come from Germany to India to study the Indian style of raga called Drupad. Well, I don't know very much, but I do know that this is the musical style of Hazaratanai Khan. So I said to my friend, do you think it's possible? Could I come with you to your music lessons? And he said, well, I don't know, my Guruji, if he will accept you, but come and we'll show, ask. We'll keep the taxi just in case. So the music master He gently accepted my presence. He knew of Hazaradanai Khan's music. And what's more, he invited me back again and again.
That's fantastic.
So, what I witnessed during one of these visits was a very dynamic teaching style that did not rely on words, but the sharing of breath, of space, and then refined vocal expressions. So one afternoon, this musical guruji, he repeated and repeated a musical phrase. And he repeated it again and again. And my friend, who's also a very fine musician, he dutifully repeated the same musical phraseology again and again. But that's not what the teacher was asking him to do. Finally, the teacher broke this space of music with words. And this is what he told the student. To me it was profound. I hope I offer this to you. He said, "What I'm asking you to do is to complete the phrase." You know, Pure Mersha talked a little bit about the ornamentation. He didn't use that word, but I've heard it used in Indian raga. You sing the phrase perfectly through the tal a certain number of times, and then at the end there can be a little improvisation and elaboration and embellishment. So this is sort of what the teacher was trying to teach the student to listen for. So he said, "What I'm asking you to do is to complete the phrase, to pick the next note. But you must be very awake and very aware and very concentrated and very still. You must hear the next note. And that note will change based on the causes and conditions of that moment. You will know the note if you're present to the silence and to the space. In that moment of silence, you'll feel the dynamic space between you and your audience. In the moment of silence, you have the captivated attention of your audience. And they're waiting, poised in the silence, waiting for the next note. It's a very important moment in the concert. Because if you feel the dynamic energy present in the silence, and you pick the perfect note in time and in space, then the audience will think you're a genius. Yeah. And you'll actually give a new meaning to the raga. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, anyone that knows a little bit about raga. If you're unable to listen and feel the meaning of the silent moment, and if you go along with the safe and predictable next note of the raga, well, then the audience is going to think you're quite mediocre. So this wonderful Indian music master's name is Ustad Wasifuddin Dagar. He has been invited to the UN to sing, you know, his mission's peace through music. But that day I felt so fortunate to be there. And he gave a great life lesson in that single moment. And I think he exemplified for me a teaching of the most profound and meaningful choices are born out of silence. So the question is, do we listen into the silence from which arises our next note, our next step, our sacred task? Hazaradanai Khan teaches, it is by going into that silence where one can forget the limitations of self, that one can get in touch with that part of one's being which is called perfection. And I saw that wisdom of those words being instructed during that music lesson, because what the teacher was asking of the student was that the student forget the raga, forget himself. Yeah, and get in touch with the perfection of the note echoing in the silence. Really, truly, I have to tell you, this is a big man. And he had this big stuffed tiger on the bed behind him. And I always was looking at this big tiger, and one day he was serving us tea, and he went like this as if to give the tiger some milk tea, right? And he's like, "You know, I love the tiger clan." I said, "Yeah, I got that figured out." He said, "But you're also a pussy cat." So then, this was a really interesting exchange because you could feel this flow of energy of voice and breath and eyes. You could see the teacher almost going, like, you know, it was like that yearning, like that expression to the beloved, you know, that, you know, it's like just searching for that next note and trying to offer it like that lap of milk, really, to the student. You know, take a little sip. I can say that during that music lesson, I experienced the living expression of this quote by Hazrat and Icon: "The earnest feelings of one heart can pierce the heart of another. They speak in silence, spreading out into the sphere so that the very atmosphere of a person's presence proclaims his thoughts and emotions. The vibrations of the soul are the most powerful and far-reaching. They run like an electric current from soul to soul." So now you might think I'm a bit silly, but I am very interested in science, and I've also worked at NASA. So I said to myself, I wonder if Hazrat Inayat Khan, when he spoke those words about the vibrations of soul to soul as being the most powerful and far-reaching, I wonder if he was catching a glimpse into the future of scientific investigations into deep space. So I know some of you, maybe all of you, know about this Hubble deep space theory. And, you know, it's kind of revolutionary because it's been discovered that by pointing the Hubble telescope into deep space, into the gaps, that it is there in those gaps that we're discovering these vast, unimagined, most extraordinarily beautiful and dynamic living vital celestial bodies. But it's not by looking at something, it's looking at space, and they reveal themselves. And all these discoveries are again emerging out of the observation into deep, vast, silent gaps in space. While it's wondrous to look into deep space and think about the wonder that may occur, you know, I think about what if we invert that view and we turn that Hubble telescope inwardly into ourselves. In those moments, we have the potentiality to converge for a single unique moment in the present. I'm almost done, by the way. And this moment is the very moment that can lead us to the gift of the divine presence within our being. Sogyal Rinpoche says it in this way: "In the stillness and silence of meditation, we glimpse and return to that deeper inner nature that we so long ago lost sight of amid the busyness and distractions of our minds." Mahatma Gandhi, one of my great inspirations, he teaches, "In the attitude of silence, the soul finds the path in a clearer light, and what is elusive and deceptive resolves itself in crystal clearness." The Tao teaches us, "If waters..." This is kind of a universal worship, by the way, isn't it, David? It's beautiful. All of this beautiful teachings. So the Tao teaches us, "If waters are placid, the moon will be mirrored perfectly. If we still ourselves, we can mirror the divine perfectly. True stillness comes..." This is still the quote. true stillness, not that profound, but anyway, this is the Taoist teachings. So true stillness comes naturally from moments of solitude where we allow our minds to settle. Just like water seeks its own level, the mind will gravitate toward the holy. Muddy water will become clear if allowed to stand undisturbed. And so too the mind becomes clear if it is allowed to be still. So allow me to close this offering on the mysticism of silence with Haswadanai Khan's own words. Very important. He says, the object of the Sufi is to enter into the silence, to learn to leave the form and external world with all its attributes, to cease striving for anything but the goal. God is not in time. Therefore, he is in silence. What all the prophets and masters have done in all ages is to express the mystery in words, in deeds, in thoughts, in feelings. But most of the mystery is expressed by them in silence. For when the mystery is in it, for then the mystery is in its place. To bring the mystery down to earth is like pulling a king onto the ground from his throne, but allowing the mystery to remain in its place. In the silent spheres, it is like giving homage to the king, to the queen, to whom all homage is due. I continue, these are the words of our master. It is by going into that silence where one can forget the limitations of the self that one can get in touch with that part of one's being which is called perfection. And this can be best attained by those who have realized the meaning of life. And finally, let us remember these words, again by Haswadanai Khan. The earnest feelings of one heart can pierce the heart of another. They speak in silence, spreading out into the sphere, so that the very atmosphere of a person's presence proclaims his thoughts and emotions. The vibrations of the soul are the most profound and far-reaching. They run like an electric current from soul to soul. And as I was leaving to come here, I was shutting down my computer, and I had a little post-it, you know, those digital post-it notes, and it kind of allowed itself to be revealed again. So give me one moment, because I want to close just with this one quote. And I have to apologize, like I always do my college students. I think I've kept you over your time, but hopefully this has been food enough. Mm-hmm. I think Kabriya might be, and Noah, it's here actually. This is the sayings of Pura Murshid, Anayat Khan, Nagamakas. And in parentheses, it describes gamakas as the feelings of the poet's heart, keyed to various musical notes. How extraordinary that that would just pop up there. All right, listen to this, how beautiful this is. These are Murshid's words. People often ask me questions which I cannot very well answer in words, and that makes me sad to think they are unable to hear the voice of my silence. Mm-hmm. If I tell you, that makes me want to cry. Do you feel it? Mm-hmm. Shall I read it one more time and then we have lunch? Think of that, how extraordinary that is. People often ask me questions which I cannot very well answer in words. And it makes me sad to think they are unable to hear the voice of my silence. I really thank you so much for your kind attention and patience.
Thank you.